Is it time for a mind shift? If you don't know what that means, then join your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, a former evangelical Christian pastor and Bible college teacher of over 20 years, along the journey of deconstruction and reconstruction of faith, life, religion, and spirituality.
I'm so happy to welcome back two former guests that were on the show last year. I just call them Flo and Jim now, but it's Conway and Sigelman. Probably people know them better by that name because they're the authors of the really important books, Holy Terror and Snapping. And so thank you. Welcome back to Mindshift Podcast.
It's great to be back, Clint.
Hi, Clint. It's great to be here. And hello, everybody out there.
Hello, everyone out there. We were saying before the show, we hit record, that we got a lot of really good feedback from our last podcast, and it's good. I wanted to circle back around and follow up on some of the things that we talked about. You sent me a really helpful document. I'm looking at it now, a good PDF with a lot of stuff on there. You say the best place to start maybe is just to follow up from our earlier podcast. Let's talk about your book, Snapping and Holy Terror, and this concept of information disease. Can you give us kind of a recap of what your research has uncovered?
Well, what we've been doing for almost 40 years now is applying the work that Flo did in her doctoral work and the work we've done together in communication to look at the communication patterns that we first saw in microcosm in the cult phenomenon of the late 70s, early 80s. And we cracked the code of the cults, as we said, the riddle of the cults, to see how they use rituals and information and mind-stilling practices and to recruit, convert, control, and really exploit the members by the millions. That was the template of Snapping. And at the end of that book, we were seeing patterns of what we called information disease, which was ways in which cult rituals and mind-stilling practices like chanting and meditation, and in Christian cults, Bible cults, they use nonstop rituals of speaking in tongues. And what we found was that over time, over weeks and months and years of repeating these ritual practices, their abilities to think critically, to control their emotions, to make reasoned, independent judgments were impaired and made captive, and in some cases damaged organically, that took them sometimes years to recover from.
I just want to do a little preface to what Jim has just said about our work, and that is that from the very beginning, we knew that what we were looking at was going to be something new in relation to an information age. What we saw in these very small groups then, when the cult phenomenon first started, what we saw then, just poking through its head through the cement, were problems that we were going to face in the future. Because we are in an information age, and that problems of information and especially communication were going to be problems in the future. And of course, as we have gone forward and as we have witnessed, that is exactly true. When you get communication that has become pathological, just like any other organic process, as we're looking at in the COVID-19 pandemic, people get sick. And so that's pretty much what we, when we began this work, we were looking at things that were going to go into the future.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate your aspect of focusing on communication. And as you say, looking at what's going on in the Trump organization, I know we're going to get into this issue of the coronavirus and the COVID-19 and all that, but there's been these research that's been done recently on this thing called censorship through noise. And that was a surprise to me. I heard about that a couple of months ago on an NPR podcast, and they were talking about this issue of being flooded with misinformation and disinformation. We can't keep up. And that's something that we've certainly seen in the Trump administration and his sort of right-wing backers. there's just a flood of stuff coming at you. You can't distinguish. And by the time the something's fact-checked, there's been 12 other statements that have been said. You can't keep up. You're just overwhelmed by it.
Well, what we've seen from the beginning, where Trump has changed all the rules, in some ways he set back work of communication, because he just uses outright lies. Whereas all the studies of communication, propaganda studies that go back a century, and all the different cultures and wartime and all the different movements, they're using more subtle techniques. They're using manipulations. And Trump has just turned on a fire hose of lies, and nobody can keep up. By the time the media gets to that one, then there's been another mountain of more of them. And this has been a constant challenge for media and for academicians to try to break Trump's code and counter it.
Well, one of the things we introduced in our book, Holy Terror, which is another component to the whole kind of communication control strategies we found in the cults, that did a form of controlling the mind and controlling people's ability to think and stopping that. What we found in what we found when we were out researching Holy Terror was another additional component, and this is very much from looking at what became a fundamentalist right political religious movement in the United States. In the 80s it began. And this was emotional control. We found that piece was very important in relation to what we were looking at and writing about in Holy Terror.
You know, what we did in the 80s, we went from these cult groups, the Moonies and Scientology and the Hare Krishnas, and the study we did, the first information disease study, we looked at 48 different North American cults and sects and extremist groups. And what we found, to our surprise, was that almost two-thirds of them, 30 of the 48, were Bible cults or fundamentalist Christian sects. And that as a group, they had some of the most extreme, lasting mental and emotional effects of any of the groups. And we did it in Holy Terror, and in the second edition of Snapping, which we put out a few years ago, we incorporated a lot of our findings from Holy Terror into the second edition of Snapping. And you look at a group which a lot of your listeners may be familiar with, groups like the Campus Crusade for Cult. They were just a Campus Crusade for Christ. I'm sorry.
I think that was a Freudian slip there.
Yeah. Campus Crusade was a template for us, because they their booklets were just explicit. They were perfect examples of communication control and emotional control, where they have a little illustration and they say, do not depend on feelings. For your heart is what betrays you, and the surrender of the will, and all these things we call covert controls and covert communication techniques, they're classics. And now you see similar ones feed through the whole Trump fundamentalist right, far-right coalition.
And we could add to that that Bill Bright and Lauren Cunningham from Youth with a Mission were some of the early proponents of Seven Mountains Dominion theology. So that's another piece to add in there. Well, I read Holy Terror first, and then I read Snapping before I talked to you two last year. And as an ex-evangelical, I just sat there and I was so, everything was resonating with me, what you said. This issue of snapping, this sort of sudden personality change when you have this conversion, in air quotes, this conversion experience, and then this information disease, this long-term sort of neurological impact that it has literally on your brain, that you, it's hard to think critically when you're in the midst of this, what Robert Lifton would say is a milieu control. And so I thought, wow, that's amazing. And then, as you say, you plug that in with what's going on in the Christian right. Now we're seeing it all come together around this coronavirus and the Trump organization.
Well, the next thing that we found, it was almost like you start out small, and then it gets a little bigger, and then it gets really big. And what we found also was that with the Christian religious right political movement was a pattern of communication, a pattern of behavior that were very similar to everything that we had been observing in our research before and what we did our study on. And what we identified in Holy Terror as ideological fundamentalism, it gets bigger. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the religious, the fundamentalist Christian right, but then it becomes the Second Amendment fundamentalists. It becomes economic fundamentalists. And it goes on. But the characteristic of the thinking, the characteristic patterns are the same as what we found in our information disease mm-hmm. study. Repetitive rituals, repetitive speech, but also the kind of impact, people unable to think, unable to reason and make choices. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're seeing a lot of now.
That's what we've been tracking for really the last 20, 30 years as Christian, extreme Christian fundamentalism and the fundamentalist right, as we termed it back in the Reagan years, expanded into anti-government fundamentalism, free market fundamentalism, what we call gun fundamentalism. And in each case, they're extreme absolute ideologies mm-hmm. that become just simplistic recipes for living for people, or control their whole of being and all their choices just around one single issue. And that was something that the founders of the religious right learned way back in the late 70s, that mm-hmm. here you had in America, the largest block of unregistered voters were evangelical Christians, by some accounts up to 2/3 of the voting populace potential. Mm-hmm. And they saw you couldn't really reach this group of people who historically had stayed out of politics and stayed out of the political arena, but you could move them over the single issue of abortion. And that's what they targeted. And they brought this group in, get them saved, get them registered, and get them out to vote. That was what Jerry Falwell Sr. Set down. And in each case, they were applying some of the same ritual practices in the political arena. Now you're seeing this across the span of fundamentalism, across the ideologies, the Tea Party movement back in 2010, by some measures, 50 to 70% of Tea Party members were already extreme fundamentalist Christians. So there's so much overlap here, and that's why the controls and the ideology merge in this new fundamentalist far right and now the Trump right.
I think you're absolutely right, because you have to look at who these groups are and what they're doing. Look, for example, at the recent spate of anti-lockdown protests in certain states. And what I found fascinating about some of these protests in places like Michigan and other places was that the groups who were actually part of the demonstrations were either white nationalists, neo-Nazi gun militia types, and Christian fundamentalists. And I said to some people, I said, well, there's almost no distinction anymore between these kinds of groups. That's right. They're all marching to the same drumbeat.
And there's so much overlap. I mean, it's interesting here. You had on government state houses, and even going to the homes of Democratic governors in so-called blue states here, you had people carrying assault rifles. You had people with Trump banners, and you had what we call the anti-science. The anti-vaxxers is the group who are against any form of vaccine, and they were carrying placards like "Jesus is my vaccine," and so you see the overlap. You see all this, and then when you track it down, you see that there's a coordination going on. These protests were not spontaneous; they were engineered by the whole far right coalition and senior present and former administration officials for the Trump campaign and the Trump White House were back there coordinating all this, especially in the states that have Democratic governors. So this is not spontaneous by any means.
We know, the DeVos family was behind some of the, in Michigan, as well as some of the other ultra wealthy far right Trump people that work in his administration.
So this is clearly a political agenda, and it's such a destructive thing. And at this time of all times, it's just doing so much damage.
Well, one of the things about all of these groups and all of these different ideologies where they all mesh together, and they really are characteristic of the things that we found again from our information disease study. And when you look at it in a time now where you have this unknown COVID virus that is killing so many, And it's like when you see these groups and the patterns of their behavior, their thought, you still get the same thing that's happening. They are mind snapshot with absolute answers, supernatural solutions, simplistic recipes for living, and other pathological expression of people's growing inability to think critically, process information, and deal with the complexities of what we are looking at today. Mm-hmm. And we found that after our information disease study, and that maps on so much to what's going on today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, if you use your model in your books as a template, you can just lay it over the top of what's going on now. I mean, you talk about the Trump cult of personality. Yeah, I mean, everything you just described goes right down the line. You've got an authoritarian, charismatic leader, and there's this echo chamber of communication and information disease from organizations like Fox News, Breitbart, you know, in InfoWars. That's what they listen to. That's where they get their news, quote unquote, and they're going out and spouting. And then they're hearing it from their own preachers as well.
And, you know, when we started, there's a big discussion today about the cult of Trump, and we have always been very precise in our definition of what constitutes a cult. And it's relatively narrow. It isn't just a living leader or some kind of bizarre, strange belief system. We always have looked for the presence of identifiable techniques of mental and emotional control. Mm-hmm. And that's what we limited everything to in our work in snapping, in our information disease study. And when we published Holy Terror and began to look at the fundamentalist right, we said, well, by one measure, this is not a cult because it's just too big. Mm-hmm. But also, it took us a while to identify the same techniques, what we call fundamentalist mind control, fundamentalist emotional control, their use of imagery that we called the supernatural Jesus, the supernatural Satan. And these things now you can see all across the board. But Trump is a cult of personality, which is very different. That's historically political. And here's a man with his own quest for power, his own pathologies. He's a pathological liar. He has what everyone identifies as pathological narcissism. And yet he has gathered around him a group of loyalists using some of the same methods that we've tracked forever, which is these loyalty oaths that he all but demands. And in some cases, you hear people recite them. And the testifying that has been required at certain Trump meetings and gatherings in the White House, where people have to attest to his sing his praises and praise him. But now we're just astounded that there's almost no deviance, nobody speaking out, nobody's pushing back on the response to this virus and speaking out against him.
Absolutely. Well, the classic story of Dr. Deborah Birx just the other day.
Oh, yes.
Sitting there in the chair listening to Trump talk about how we need to inject ourselves with disinfectants and get UV light under the skin. And the look on her face, you could just see the inner tension, the inner conflict. As a scientist, as a medical professional herself, she's unbelievable that she's listening to this. And yet she went out over the weekend talk shows and defended him.
But you know, there's
say anything bad about him.
There's thousands and thousands of career civil servants in the federal government who have been doing the greatest work for decades. And you can say all you want about bureaucracy, but when Trump came in and just cut the heads off all the federal agencies and installed his ideological loyalists and his personal loyalists, this is where, through his vindictiveness, through his attacks on Twitter and his revenge against his critics and people who have testified under oath in congressional inquiries, he has managed to intimidate and silence so much of the federal bureaucracy. The leaks, the whistleblowers are almost non-existent through this time when everybody is seeing what he and his government are doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the, you know, I'm going to go back a little bit. After we did our information disease study and all of the findings that we found and took to the University of Oregon for peer review, and but when we, after that, what we were just astounded by is that in the, was it, Jim, DSM-4, which was the first time that the whole pattern of post-traumatic stress disorders were put into the mental health genre, into that, the DSM-4. Mm. And what was so amazing to us is that those characteristic of post-traumatic stress disorders and the range that they came all the way into the organic effects on the Vietnam vets mapped onto our findings in relation to the cult groups and fundamentalist groups. And now, I mean, I think the guy who discovered PTSD, wasn't it?
Yeah, we sat with Dr. John Wilson, Cleveland State University, who discovered post-traumatic stress and upset his entire profession, who couldn't imagine how it could be 5 or 10 years after a traumatic event mm-hmm. that people could have these flashbacks and night terrors mm-hmm. and all the effects of PTSD. We sat with him and we were describing our work and talking about his and how of the 20 symptoms of information disease, we uncovered physical, mental, emotional, inability to think, hallucinations, delusions, inability to break these repetitive patterns and rhythms. 20 of the 21 mapped right on to his model of PTSD. The only exception was the violent tendencies and suicidal tendencies, which were much more extreme among Vietnam War vets at the time. Mm-hmm. But he said to us, he said, you know, I've come to have the opinion that there is a societal form of PTSD. Mm-hmm. And he was describing it in terms of a much broader social phenomenon. And it took us a long time to figure out how does this mesh with our work. And what we're seeing now through the Trump right and Fox News and internet social media echo chamber, we're seeing what we're beginning to call as societal forms of information disease. Mm. And in Trump's case, maybe it ought to be called disinformation disease. Yeah.
Well, when you look at the process, I sound like a clinician. When you look at the processes that go on, the ones that we were investigating all these years, the ones that we put under the microscope and took for peer review on our findings, when you look at it today, and you look at the pathologies just of Trump himself, the pathologies of personality that he has. He is definitely a narcissistic personality.
Oh, no doubt.
And some of the other pathologies that he demonstrates in the way that he functions. And then when you get into an echo chamber, when you have that kind of power that Trump has, and the way he is using it, whether it's his loyalty oaths and all that, why are people so afraid? What is it that's going on with the Senate? What has happened to Mitch McConnell? I mean, a lot of it is that when you see this kind of thing, and then you see what you were talking about, Clint, the rallies mm-hmm. and the people who make up those rallies and how those rallies run, and you can see the way in which corrupted information, the pathologies of personality, all of those things are the organic processes in the communication of information and the running of an entire nation, mm-hmm. how they get corrupted. And what we are seeing now in these rallies, the whole, it's information disease, but it is, I think, a really dramatic form of societal information disease.
And, you know, when we did our study, when I say we kept pretty strict limits on what we would call a cult, and on, especially when we use a term like disease, why we took our finding to the University of Oregon and did a year-long statistical analysis to confirm the correlations between the amount of time that these cult and Bible sect members spent immersed in mind-stilling rituals. And we found a direct correlation in the hours per week they spent speaking in tongues or chanting or meditating and the extent of those 20 symptoms afterward. So that's a pretty strict definition why to talk about a societal form of PTSD or the societal form. Now, of course, we can't study and sit down with all these people and use the questionnaires and surveys that we have done. But one thing we saw as we've tracked this for more than 30 years, there was a period, I think during the Bush-Cheney years, We did another nationwide tour, went into mega churches and found ex-Christians. And that was when there was a group for a short time called Fundamentalist Anonymous that we went on the Donahue Show with their founders. And by the next day, they had 30,000 members. And within a month or two, they had 60,000 members. Wow. And these people were so aware, partly from the education that was going on by this group, from our work, a lot of other people then. And in the 2000s, when we went out during the Bush years and talked with these former evangelicals, you probably crossed paths with so many of these people. Mm-hmm. But we sat down with them to ask them what brought them in, what were the moments and experiences.
Yes.
They couldn't tell us, Clint. It was not like the clarity of that moment when Flo talks about that microcosm in the late 70s, early 80s. The awareness levels of people in terms of how they had been recruited and converted and how they had been affected. And now when we go out and talk to people in these political arenas, they don't have a clue what's affected them. And we just ask them a standard question. How did you come to believe
that
extreme idea that you just said? They can't even tell us. But that's why this echo chamber of the Trump, Fox News, social media, that whole network, which is a closed information environment. We can all see what's going in, but most of the people who live in that world that they call Trump world, Rachel Maddow calls it Earth 2.
Mm-hmm. Alternate reality.
And they do not have the awareness of how the messages and the disinformation and the outright lies have affected their abilities to think critically and to make the kind of reasoned judgments that you need in a democratic society.
We know it works too, because I was talking a little bit ago about that NPR podcast that I was listening to, where the guy wrote an article, I think it was in New York Times, about the Trump disinformation campaign that they're planning to spend $1 billion on just Facebook ads and things like that coming up for the 2020 election. And he started, he did an experiment. He's a journalist of over 20 years, thinks to himself, I'm a critical thinker. I'm not a Republican. You know, I'm a smart guy. He created a fake Facebook profile and just started signing up to these sort of MAGA Trump pro Facebook groups and pages just to see what they were talking about. And he, over a period of months, he was flooded with so much disinformation about the news stories and current events and all the stuff that Trump was saying versus the lamestream media and all this. He found his own head was getting scrambled. He said, I couldn't keep my own head straight anymore because it was coming at me like a fire hose. And so that's, I think you're describing that information disease. That's what was happening to him. And he kind of said, am I going nuts? I mean, what's going on? He had to quit all that stuff. He said, I can't do this anymore because I'm starting to doubt my own reality with all the gaslighting that's just constantly coming from that side of the political arena. Just going to take a really short break in my conversation here with Conway and Sigmund. I hope you're enjoying it, and there's a lot more to come in the second half of this episode. I say they're my heroes because really, you know, there's a lot of books that have come out recently on Christian nationalism, the Christian right, which is absolutely important. It's essential. It is absolutely critical to get the word out there as to what the Christian nationalist movement is doing, what's going on the religious right. People like Catherine Stewart, Sam Perry, Julie Ingersoll, and so many others that I've been fortunate to have on this show. But you know what I love about Conway and Sigmund is that they were doing this research on the ground back in the day. They started researching the book that would become Holy Terror in 1980, and it came out in 82, just off the back of the Ronald Reagan election to the presidency. And they were seeing it right on the ground. And so the book is absolutely essential if you want to understand the origins of what we see in the Christian right today, what we see the evangelical support and vote for Donald Trump, and all the things that are going on in terms of Christian nationalism. They put their finger on it right when it was starting to happen, just after the founding of the Moral Majority in 1979. So absolutely critical to get their perspective. If you haven't read Holy Terror, you need to pick it up. It might be hard to find because it's out of print, but I found one on, I think, Amazon or eBay a couple years ago. So they're out there still. So you can still get a hold of a copy. Anyway, before we get back into the chat with Conway and Sigma, I just wanted to give a shout out to the people who have so graciously decided to sponsor this show on Patreon. I wanted to say a thank you to Danielle, to Ray Guilford, to Joshua Barley, Elaine Edmondson, and Sandra Bandman. Thank you all so much for your support of the show. It makes my hard work that I do seem to be worth it sometimes, but anyway, thank you all so much. I really appreciate it. If you want to support this show on Patreon and become a part of our closed Mindshift Podcast Facebook group, the links to that are in the show notes. As always, one of the benefits that you get for being a Patreon supporter, besides early access, besides the closed Facebook group access, we do our monthly Mindshift Podcast Zoom calls. And in fact, this month, we have returning guest Laura Anderson. She was on the show a while ago. We did a Zoom call with Laura last year as well, and she's going to come back on the 31st of this month, and we're going to do a special chat on learning how to forgive people who in the past may have caused us religious trauma. And I'm thinking largely of people like parents and those in the church. If you were an ex-evangelical or ex-cult member, you come out of religion. And in fact, it's not necessarily just the people from our past. It could be people who are triggering us. Even now, we hear stories of parents who continue to shove religion down our throats or our children's throats and basically refuse to honor our boundaries that we've set. And so this can be hugely triggering. And in fact, the reason we're having this call on this particular topic, it's off the back of an email that I received from a listener about a month or so ago, a gal named Elisa, and she was asking these questions. And then I thought, you know, this would make a fantastic topic for a Zoom call. So Laura Anderson, as I say, is going to drop in on that call. It's going to be really good. Hopefully you can work through that. Now, if you are not able to see that call or you're not part of the group, I will be posting it later on, maybe a week or so later, on my Mindshift Podcast Facebook page. So there is a way you can catch that chat. And so if you head over there and like the page now, you'll receive the notification of when that is loaded up to that page. So you'll be able to watch that video later. I just wanted to say, too, before we get back into the chat with Conway and Sigelman, what's coming up in the next few weeks, the next few episodes. We've got David from The Graceful Atheist coming up after this one. And then I've got a chat I think I'm going to do as a bonus episode with John Loftus. We talked about his book, The Case Against Miracles. And then we're going to get back on this track of Dominion Theology Reconstructionism. I had a chat with Dr. Milton Gaither. He is probably the leading expert, certainly in America, on this topic of the history of homeschooling. And we had a fantastic conversation the other day. He's an absolute fount of knowledge on this subject. And that's where this research has led me into homeschooling, into the Quiverful movement, into biblical patriarchy. And so I'm chasing up people to have more conversations on those topics coming up as well. I'm also in chats with Dr. Michael McVicker, who wrote probably the best book on the history of R.J. Rushdoony and Christian Reconstructionism. Sometime in the middle of June, we're going to have that conversation. So I don't know about you, but I am super excited. I love talking to people who are experts in this field. I'm learning more and more all the time, doing more research and writing, and this has taken me down a rabbit hole, but it's basically where the research takes you, and that's where we're going. So I hope you stay with me along this journey, wherever it leads. And part of that is what led me to Conway and Sigelman in the first place, when I read their book, Holy Terror. So let's pick it back up. If you remember, I had just raised the point about this issue of gaslighting and how it relates to brainwashing and information disease in the Trump era.
Absolutely. We saw that in the 70s and 80s. Lots of our colleagues in the media thought they would go get these great stories about cults by infiltrating the cults. And most of them didn't come out. Yeah. They had to be kidnapped and deprogrammed forcibly in several instances, literally. And now we know you immerse yourself in that vat of poison and it is going to seep into you.
But this it's is difficult. Where my, you know, always my point, because like in our last podcast, you said, Flo, you're so emphatic.
You were pounding the table.
I was. Jim's kept me from doing that this time. But why I'm so always coming back to the notions, not just the notions, the communication and information. We live in an information age. Mm-hmm. That's not just a label that somebody stuck on what year it is, or the 2000s or whatever. This is a really, really huge shift from matter and energy, which is the stuff that ruled us forever, and where you would see people like in the old North Korean brainwashing stuff mm-hmm. that you see Lifton dealing with. But now we are dealing in a world of information and communication. And when that is weaponized, when that is turned against people, mm-hmm. it's organic. Information and communication in relation to the human brain and the human mind is an organic force. And when you see that corrupted, and you see that weaponized, or with when this poor journalist said that his mind was coming undone with all of it coming at him mm-hmm. so much, it's also the meaning of repetition, lie, and it's like your mind cannot deal with that. It goes through its own change.
And that's what we yes. found, a direct mm-hmm. correlation
right.
with, you know, with percentages mm-hmm. of correlation in the hundreds of thousands of a point that show that over time, the intensity and duration of amount of time that someone is immersed in one of these closed information environments, whether it's a cult or whether it's the Trump right echo chamber, it will affect people organically. And there have been studies, you've probably seen some of the follow-up studies that have confirmed our work. One of them, a big study about a decade ago, was looking at the effects of life-changing religious experiences on regions of the brain. And they found that there were damage, there was shrinkage among, that was twice the extent in extreme fundamentalist Christians as it was among Catholics or in atheists. And now this is really where what Flo said, it all kind of comes together. The ideological fundamentalism, the societal form of information disease, and now America's tragic, disgraceful response to this pandemic at the top of our federal government. You know, the ideological component is not just what so many people in the media are saying is Trump's incompetence and the incompetence of his administration. This is intentional. There's an ideology there that says that federal government should not exist. This goes back to the Reagan years when, mm-hmm. when Reagan said, government is not the solution to our problems, government is the problem. And this anti-government ideology is so extreme, combined with what Trump unmasked across all the different groups on the right, including even much of the evangelical right, mm-hmm. which is just the race hatred and the ethnic hatreds that he has ridden to power. It's part of the response here. They just do not want to do anything, not just for Democrats, but for states where there's large population shares of Blacks and Hispanics. They just don't want to help anybody.
Mm-hmm. But you know what, Clint? The thing that is so, I don't even know what the right word is for it. Our governor would say, really horrific. Mm-hmm. Is the fact that these people now who think that they are standing for some great biblical Christian belief system or whatever, mm-hmm. what they are showing now that they have joined with the fundamentalist right, when they have joined Trump, they have joined all of this, is that what this COVID pandemic here in the United States is showing crystal clear. If they are good Christians, why is it they're part of something that doesn't want human beings to live? And that is what they are standing for.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's become a death cult, hasn't it?
Yes. Yes.
You know, saying, well, if a certain number of people die, even if I die,
doesn't matter. Yeah, yeah.
You know, we were tracking this from Trump's personal pathologies. Flo has always said that at a certain level, these kinds of pathologies become contagious. Mm. And there is in Trump not just the narcissism, and that he's a pathological liar and has a lust for power, and that he has ripped off the mask of race hatred that people have peppered over with all kinds of euphemisms and ideologies for the last three decades. But there's a streak in Trump. You see it in his vindictiveness, his need, the delight he takes in punishing his critics and punishing even citizens in the government who have been subpoenaed to just tell the truth about him. But he also delights in driving the media crazy and the liberals crazy with his breaking of norms, his defiance of subpoenas, and even through this crisis, the policies he has announced, like ordering meat packers to go, workers to go back to work in these infected packing plants without giving them any protection, without putting down any regulations. There's a part of him that seems to flow through many of the people in his movement, which is just outright cruelty. There's a part of them that seems to love to watch people suffer, that they delight in this as a confirmation of their own power. And this is some of the sickness that we are watching. And to call this a societal form of a information-based or disinformation-based disease, I don't think it's an exaggeration anymore. I think this is an urgent matter, and it's something that everybody's seeing just naked in the light of day right now.
It really is. It's shown a light on a lot of stuff that was already there. Well, I wanted to go back to something you said, Flo. You said weaponization, weaponizing communication and information. One of the things that really jumped out at me when I was reading through your PDF that you sent me was this statement. You say, quote, "The epic failure of the Trump White House, Republican Senate, and red state governor's response to the pandemic is not only incompetent, but in many respects, intentional," end quote. And you said that really jumped out at me. Because I thought, okay, everyone's been saying since Trump got elected, oh my God, I hope there's not a big crisis, you know, because he'll never be able to work his way through it. Well, now it's happened. And I think reading the news reports and everything, everyone's just saying, well, yes, Trump's incompetent and he's not fit to be in charge and all the rest of it. But you take it a step further. You're saying actually it's intentional, his lack of response. Why would you say that you think it's intentional?
Because every pattern, and anybody who has been watching Trump, not even before, and see, well, he moved out of New York because New Yorkers got his number. So he left New York.
He's a citizen of Florida.
Florida, right.
Good riddance, said New York.
he could not deal with Andrew Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo was way too smart for him.
He loves the Republican governor of Florida, doesn't he, DeSantis?
But if you've been watching what he has done across the board, it is nothing short of weaponizing all of the values of the United States, weaponizing everything to get his way. But the biggest thing, because of this pathology in his own personality, the narcissism, the pathology, the absolute need for power and adoration, is that he has been doing this from the beginning. He has turned, from the beginning of this pandemic, every step of the way, it has been turned toward his reelection. And there is not one thing that has gone by unless the governors extracted something from him, something that he had to do, every single thing he does is because he wants the good numbers. He wouldn't let people off an infected ship coming from somewhere because the numbers would go up.
I like the numbers where they are. That's what he said. Not our fault anyway.
but that is what he's been doing from the beginning. And it's for his reelection. But I tell you, if this man is reelected, we're hearing it now. We're reading it from Europe. We're reading it from all over the world. The fact is that Europe is on its own now because there is no United States anymore. And if this election goes down and we don't control this societal form of information disease, yes, we will see that. And I'm sorry to say that, but there doesn't seem to be any out from it, just like there is no out from this pandemic, except try to control it, try to learn, and try to do better.
Well, I was just going to say, I know you wanted to say something, Jim, but the weird thing is, the irony of it is, the only thing really he had going for him on a political sort of a front was the economy was doing well. And that was his biggest plank in his platform for reelection.
Yes.
If he'd handled the coronavirus much better, more effectively, the economy perhaps wouldn't be so bad off right now. So it's a catch 22 for him. It's such a strange thing.
His, his own personal pathologies, his narcissism and pathological lying, his denial, his anti-science attitude, which is probably an outgrowth of his own ignorance, yes, more than it is ideology in his case, but that this is spread through the whole Trump right. Two epidemiologists wrote in the New York Times on April 14th that because of Trump's delays and denials, that probably accounts for up to 90% of the positive cases and the deaths in this country, why America's numbers have just run away at an exponential pace. Mm-hmm. And it is not just because of incompetence. It's because this is the ideology that pervades the Trump administration. And as you know, and as your listeners probably are well aware of, there's so many extreme fundamentalist ideologues in the Trump government, from Pompeo and Alex Azar and Pence, and these people who are all part of the cabinet sponsors of the Bible reading in the White House and in the Congress.
Yep. Ralph Strollinger.
The whole
Bible studies in the White House every week.
And you know, Capitol. And you know this from your Dominionist research. The Dominionists want to take dominion over all the institutions of government and bring them under God's law over man's law. And this is part of what's going on in this country. That I we've traveled a lot. We've spent a lot of time in Europe in the last 10, 15 years. Nobody there can grasp what's gone down in America. And now this is so tragic and such a disgrace. And as Flo said, the lack of American leadership on this pandemic, the lack of American leadership on the world scale and moral leadership is something that the whole world is reeling from and trying to figure out where do we go from here without an America as we've had for the whole post-war era.
And you realize, just to when you said, Clint, that if he had handled this pandemic better, if he had done that, that would have been really good for him. But you see, in this Earth 2 mindset, where you have supernatural thinking, where you do not believe in science, you believe in whatever else somebody says to you, but you don't believe in documentation, you don't believe, and at a moment like this, in a pandemic, you must believe in the facts and science. And they can't do that. They can't think like that. They can't do that. And that is another really telling factor in what we are calling the societal form of information.
It's not just that they won't and that they can't because they're incompetent. We feel from everything we've seen that this is really at a much deeper level, that they're not capable of thinking critically and of making the kind of reason, independent, informed decisions that you need to have in a crisis like this. This is where, when you look at our governor, Andrew Cuomo, every day with his addresses, with charts and numbers and data-driven decision-making, it's just, thank God we have Andrew Cuomo as some kind of an antidote to what has happened to this country and to our image in the eyes of the world right now.
And I have to tell you, it's like Andrew Cuomo ends his daily briefings and he tells New Yorkers all the time that we'll never go back to normal. We have to have a new normal, but we have to reimagine it. And use this time, he says, to make yourself better. Use this time, but we have to reinvent, we have to create, we have to imagine. And he always says to New Yorkers are tough, but tough doesn't mean just, tough. It means smart, it means disciplined, it means unified, and it means loving. And that is one thing that we have not seen one ounce of from this administration.
Or from the Christian fundamentalist right.
And that is so ironic. That's it.
I was just going to say that what we're seeing here, we see certain megachurch pastors continuing to hold services and screaming about their constitutional rights being violated, but yet they're just echoing the line that they're hearing from the Trump administration and, liberate these states. You got to liberate Michigan and he's promoting these extremists that are going out and violating social distancing orders. And I thought the governor of Michigan, she hit it exactly on the head. She said to these protesters, you guys don't understand, by going out and violating all these protocols, you're going to extend the spread of the virus and thereby lose even more of the freedoms that you so desperately think you have to have to go out and buy hair coloring and lawn fertilizer and, you know, all these essential items.
Get more tattoos.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I had a tattoo booked and I had to cancel it because of the lockdown.
Yes. But, you know, this is something unfortunate. This is something that we've been watching in this protest movement to see what we've been watching since the rise of the religious right in the Reagan years. These rallies and these grassroots organizations are all engineered and coordinated centrally. And what we've seen is recent polls have come out. The number of people who really want to speed up the reopening of this country by almost every poll is less than 17, 20% tops. The number of people who think that the restrictions are good and should stay on and they should even be made more strict is in the 70, 80% range now. And what that's showing, which is interesting to me, is that even a lot of Trump's base has split with him on this. Some Republican governors have, but there must be even, and I'm glad to see it, some element of the evangelical, the Christian right, that is realizing that that they're better than Trump, they're smarter than Trump, and their goal isn't just money over everything, over human life.
And political power. Exactly. I was just reading an article the other day in Christianity Today about a guy who's been very vocally anti-Trump. He's a Christian, he's an evangelical, he's a Republican. He's kind of one of these never-Trumpers. And he was saying the shocking thing about his fellow evangelicals, their response to him being vocally anti-Trump has been unbelievable amounts of cruelty, as you just said. He's been shocked at how he and his family have been treated by people that he thought were caring, loving Christians, and they have turned on him, and it's just unbelievable. So, yeah, the cruelty is just staggering from a Christian perspective.
And Trump personally seems to relish this.
Cruelty, he revels in it.
To watch people suffering. And unfortunately, because he has appealed to the most base angels of our nature, and they're not the better angels of our nature, so many of his followers and adherents have pushed the button on their own worst tendencies. And you're seeing that mirrored in a lot of the extreme ideologies on the Trump right.
Well, maybe we can end this thing on a positive note, because we've been talking a lot of doom and gloom here. A lot of negativity, but there, as we talked about last time we had this conversation, we ended on a high note in the sense that you had some advice for people. You said, okay, what can we do? Are we powerless in this thing? Is there anything we can do? What's your advice for people who are thinking, my God, this is the darkest hour?
It is a dark hour because the world and many countries have been hit with both. It's a double whammy, the coronavirus pandemic and authoritarian aspirations by many leaders of some nations. And the United States is the big kahuna here with both of these. And I do think that this pandemic and lockdowns and empty streets and the Rolling Stones just wrote a new song called
"Living in a Ghost Town."
You know, but it gives us, it really has given us a chance to think about things, to re-examine things that used to be. It's almost as if this now is the beginning of the future. This now, whatever we do, is the beginning of the future. Everything before is the past. And I think that this is the time that we re-examine that and re-examine what it is that we want for a future. And to know, because we can see now, that every individual, every person, no matter race, no matter creed, no matter color, no matter sexual orientation, every person matters. And that is where we have to come to that anew for this new time that we are in, and to uncover those values again. And it's like, for people in the United States, to understand this is not political anymore. This cannot be weaponized, and you cannot fall into that. You go out and you vote, and you vote for those fundamental values that America has given to people and to given to us.
You know, one of the things that that we've been saying since Holy Terror came out, when we talked to so many former members of cults and extreme fundamentalist sects and political extreme groups, was that the people who have come through this experience, and that's probably a lot of people in your audience, Clint, you know, we've said for years that all of you are pioneers on the frontiers of freedom of thought, of freedom of self-determination for you personally and for the countries that you live in. And we've always said we need to hear your voices, your experiences, your hard-won wisdom, because that's how you counter the controls of the fundamentalist right and the Trump right. And there's no time like now to try to break through that echo chamber, whether it's one-to-one with your family and your friends, or whether it's in the media and all the platforms people have now in social media and mainstream media now, to counter the poison. And then we do that with just telling your stories, explaining your experiences. And then obviously in November is going to be the big verdict on all this. If people are able to overcome the fire hose of lies and the oceans of poison that will be poured on the American people by the Trump right, by the Putin, by who knows who else. But if people learn how it is that information can affect your thinking, your feeling, your decision-making, and maybe they can stand up to it. We saw it in all of our research. People came through this, and they took back control of their minds, whether they were members of the Manson family or members of the most destructive cults. You can do it, but it takes the work of every person speaking out.
And you can't be the thing that Trump counts on and the thing that all the cult leaders counted on. And it's a thing that we saw even in the whole Jim Jones, People Temple tragedy. If you're afraid and you allow them to take your own individual power, individual voice away, then you are giving yourself over to be a slave. If you understand and hold on to that and hold on to those values that you know, we had something in the beginning of snapping when people would ask us, how do you know? How would I know if something's happening? And we say, you know, there's a tummy judgment that you have because there's a stress response that goes, it's a brain gut stress. It's a tummy judgment. And you listen to that and you do what it tells you. If it says get out, then you go.
Yeah.
And, okay. And now it's the same thing. There's a tummy judgment too in relation to knowing what is real and what is right. And following that and not be afraid to speak, even to say to your friends, to your parents, to whoever, not be afraid to stand now for all that we stand for in the United States and to stand up for the larger principles, the loving kindness that Christianity should be.
It should be. Yeah, it's hard to see it.
And all the other religions too should be, and in the future must be, if we are going to survive.
And we've said in many other conversations with people that come out of certainly evangelicalism, fundamentalism, and cults as well, I wonder if this coronavirus situation is going to cause them to deconstruct, as it were, and really question some of the dogmas and some of the things they've been told, especially as you were pointing out, the anti-science, the taking refuge in platitudes and all that. When they're not working, where's God in all this? You know, I mean, I know we're not talking about theology, but that's my background, you know, and I've been doing a lot of questioning about looking at some of the Christian responses to the coronavirus, and it's just unbelievable. It's all over the map. They don't know what to say.
And you know, we've seen this in all the groups we've studied. People who came out on their own, the walkaways as they call them, they were the ones who's had one moment, even just a moment, if you're in the kitchen of the Hare Krishnas, or if you're working in the office of Scientology and you see their private documents, when people would have these snapping moments when they would snap out of the cult states they were in. And we know how it works. You can just reach down into your gut and grab hold of that switch that you have surrendered, your autonomous self. You can grab hold of it. It's very difficult. It helps if you have someone to guide you or help you, whether it's a deprogrammer or a knowledgeable counselor, or if you're just reading things that can throw that switch. But with this outrage now, one promising sign may well be that, according to some of these numbers, maybe half of Trump's base is now questioning the incredible cruelty and that he is inflicting on people, the glee that he's taking in this and the damage that's being done. And maybe that will lead to just what you're saying. Snapping out of it and finding themselves again.
We hope so. Well, there was just a document that came out the other day. It was supposed to be a secret document circulating among Republican politicians. I don't know if you saw that, just a thing in the news where they're talking about what should you talk about with the media in the upcoming election? And they said, don't defend Trump, whatever you do.
Right. Yes,
so the Republicans are saying that, you know, we can't defend him. You can't talk bad about him. But, you know, some of the more insane things he said are literally indefensible. And they're stuck now because they're between a rock and a hard place, aren't they?
Yes.
Well, what Governor Cuomo said today was that the American people are showing themselves to be more loving and more giving and more rational than their national leaders. And, and if that's something, the trouble is, as Woodward said, Trump rules by fear.
Yes.
And we'd add to that just sheer hatred and cruelty. And there's a lot of people who know in themselves that they're better than that. And this country historically has been better than that. Human beings can be better than that. And if people will just reach down and grab that lever and take control of themselves again, we could break through this societal disease that we're struggling with along with the pandemic.
Right. And if we win one, we'll win both. So got it. Yeah. And that is because there's so much writing on it. So much good, you know, that is writing on it.
There is, there's a lot of information out there, but it's hard to find the truth. And maybe that's a good place to end it. Let's try to end on as the high as note as we possibly can.
Loving.
End it with love. I was just going to say, by way of conclusion, I do appreciate the fact that you have this body of work out there as we've been able to use it as a model or a template to lay over the situation. So I really thank you for what you've done for the last 30 years at least, and what you're still continuing to doing. So thank you, Jim and Flo, for taking some time out of your schedule to talk to me.
Thank you and your audience for giving us the opportunity to make some of these connections and to report on some of these patterns that we have been observing that can be dark, but also that can show the way out.
Yes, and it's so important too for us to be able to just to speak straight, directly about it. Because there's a lot of people who don't understand what your audience understands. they'll sit there and they'll roll their eyes.
don't understand it. How can people find you? What's the best place to get a hold of you if they wanted to get more information on what you've been talking about?
Well, most of the research that we have done up to this point is in the second edition of Snapping, which people can find everywhere. But our website, stillpointpress.net is a way that people can contact us and see all of our work. And hopefully maybe before the election, Clint, if we get a chance, maybe we'll do one more round with you.
I would love to have you guys back. And we did talk about maybe having you back on a Zoom call for our closed group again. So that would be fantastic. So thank you so much, Jim and Flo, for taking some time out. I really appreciate touching base with you. I hope you stay safe.
Thank you. You too. And to all your listeners.
Yes. Take care of the sheep.